Expat Files with John Mueller, Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines, or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites, where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, it's time to take off those rose-colored glasses and find out. So let's get started. Now, of all the questions and emails I get from people, I think the issue of the cost of living down here comes up the most. People want more examples about the things I say. And when I say things like, living down here in Latin America when you're off the tourist trail, you can live like a first world person on half of what it takes or less up where you live. And at half or less of the stress levels that you get in the first world, well, sometimes people ask for more proof. So I'm glad to oblige. And here's really good proof now about that very low cost of living, right from the lips of expat Eddie, who just a few weeks ago moved his entire household, a 5-bedroom, 4,000-square-foot house, to a new house about 30 kilometers away, which is about 20 miles from the old house. So the moving people had to go into his house and take everything out, put it in the truck, drive 20 miles, unload all that stuff into his new house, and drive directly through the capital city of El Salvador to get to his new house on the other side of the city in the mountains. And it's an unbelievable chaotic drive through a metropolitan area of about 2 million people. So that trip from his old house to the new house took a little more than an hour. So here's how it worked out. Eddie rented one of those big white moving trucks that you see big retailers like Sears and Walmart use to move their stuff around. But it wasn't like a U-Haul. Eddie didn't rent it to drive it himself. He rented it from a mom-and-pop moving operation that came along with the package. And in fact, this little mom-and-pop furniture moving company had only one truck, and all four guys up in the cab were brothers. And believe it or not, this is a truck that came from the United States. A second-hand truck. Probably even third or fourth-hand. Most certainly bought as a wreck at an auction up in the first world, brought down and repaired cheaply. Anyway, that's how most trucks end up getting down here. And why there are so many old junks on the road. No little mom-and-pop business of any kind could ever afford to buy a new truck. That's for sure. Only big businesses can do it down here. So if you've ever wondered what happens to old cars and trucks up in the first world after the useful life is over, well, most of them don't get squished in a car crusher like in those mobster movies. They end up down here in Latin America getting repaired over and over again. But back to the original point. Now, this truck was about 10 years old, a little battered around the edges, but very suited for its purpose. And funny enough, on the side of the truck, the old logo was still painted on from the first world. It said Total Flooring, Indianapolis, Indiana, and it had a U.S. phone number on it. And on the front and back, in hand-painted letters, were the words flete. That's flete, which is the universal Spanish word that means this truck is for hire. So how do you find good, reliable moving guys like that? Are they in the yellow pages? Are they in the internet? And can you trust them? If they're not in the yellow pages and they're not on the internet, how do you know they're not just going to pack up all your stuff, take off, and you'll never see them again? Especially if they see that you're a first world gringo or European with expensive tastes, like leather furniture, brand name appliances, and a couple of hideously oversized big screen TVs. All the stuff that marks you as a guy worth stealing from. Well, I'll get to that later, but first let me tell you how you find these guys. Now, there's two types of moving companies here in Latin America. Now, you could check the yellow pages, because phone books still exist down here in a big way. I don't know about the first world, but people down here still use them like the Bible. Because, like I said so many times before, Latins are about 5 or 10 years behind the first world curve. I don't think in 5 years there'll be a phone book left in the United States. But down here, I guarantee there will be, since only 10 or 15% of the people down here have access to the internet in their homes. So like I said, there's two kinds of moving companies. The professional big-time ones that are in the yellow pages and on the internet, which, by the way, are modeled a lot like first-world moving companies, and are sometimes actually connected with a first-world company's import-export division, because those huge international companies are always bringing stuff in and out of the country, by boat and by air, and they need a fleet of trucks to move that stuff to the end client. Like, for example, those huge shipping companies like Sealand and Maersk and Allied Transport. If you call up one of their offices down here, which are always at the airport, by the way, because they do a lot of air freight shipping, too. Anyway, all those companies are connected to a local big-time moving firm, which will be pretty much first world. And they might even own a big local moving company or have a huge financial interest in it, and that way they can force it to have first world standards. So if you search the Yellow Pages or hit the internet, you're going to come up with one of these big transnational companies that's going to hand you over to a first world style moving company, and you're going to pay 3 times the price of what expat Eddie paid, maybe even more. And what are you going to get for all that extra money? Well, you're going to get a little nicer truck. You're going to get guys in uniforms with logos on them. And they're going to be bonded and insured against accident and damage to your stuff. But don't let that fool you, because you're down here in the third world. And if some of your stuff does get damaged, they won't cover it unless you allow them to do all the packing, using their boxes, their styrofoam peanuts, and all the packing stuff they use. And you'll pay for all those packing materials at their inflated prices too. So in the end, not only will you be paying 3 times as much as Eddie paid when he used a mom and pop moving firm, anyway, if he used one of these big outfits, you'll get stuck for the packing bill too, which means you might end up paying 5 times as much as Eddie paid when he used the mom and pop moving company. And by the way, the word for moving down here is mudanza, M-U-D-A-N-Z-A. So if you Google the word mudanza and the country and city you're at, you'll come up with all the more expensive companies who advertise a lot. But even so, they'll still be much cheaper than the same kind of moving service up in the first world, because in the first world, you got to pay those movers 15 or 20 bucks an hour each. And down here, the helpers make about 10 to 20 bucks a day. Unless, of course, you're the truck owner, then you make more. So anyway, how do you find a good, dirt-cheap mover, like the one expat Eddie hired? Because they won't be in the Yellow Pages or Google, that's for sure. Well, here's how it works. Latin America is just filled with hardware stores because, well, there's still lots of construction going on, though that's sure to change as the first world economic crisis finally sweeps through down here, which is just starting to happen. Anyway, you locate one of these big hardware stores, and by the way, they're called ferreterias down here. In Spanish, ferreterias, which means hardware store. Now down here, the average guy doesn't have a car, much less a pickup truck, and he arrives at the hardware store on foot or by bus. So if he buys a bathtub or a toilet or some long tubes or some sacks of concrete or some metal, he's got to hire someone to haul it to his house. So therefore, every hardware store has a short list of mom-and-pop movers, each with a pickup truck or a flatbed or an enclosed furniture moving truck. And they're on call to haul your stuff any time of day. And if you're near a big, busy commercial district, and there are a number of hardware stores and building supply stores clustered together, which you'll see all the time in the big cities, you'll notice that there's a group of empty trucks nearby. Those are all little mom-and-pop single-truck flete operations, trucks for hire, waiting for someone to buy something at one of those hardware stores so they can haul it and make a few bucks. All those little fletes, those mom-and-pop truck operations, seem to hang together, and they'll often share loads when someone places a big order at the hardware store or construction supply company. So when you see all these mom-and-pop fletes parked around a corner or in a nearby lot, it's simple, you just pick the guy who's got the size truck that you might need, and it makes sense to pick the truck that's in the nicest condition, too. And that's when the negotiations begin, and the prices are always negotiable. If you just want to move a bed or some dressers or some appliances like washing machines and dryers, you can pick a guy with a big pickup truck that's not enclosed but has a metal cage welded around it so the stuff doesn't fall out. And when a truck has a welded metal cage like that around it, it allows you to tie your stuff down quite easily with bungee cords. However, that may not be good in the rainy season unless you got a nice big tarp to put around it. And these guys don't carry stuff like that. And when they do, it's always torn, ripped, and has a lot of holes in it, so you can't trust them to keep your stuff dry. So you gotta bring your own. And you know those cheap blue plastic tarps with the grommets in them? Everybody should really have one of those because it protects anything against rain. And I'm sure you can buy a nice big one at any hardware store for 20 bucks that'll cover anything you can pack into a pickup, a flatbed truck, or one of those open-ended monstrosities with a cage welded around it. Now, if you do pick one of those open-ended pickups with a cage on it, that's the cheapest way, by far, to move your stuff. And if you have one of those nice blue plastic tarps, that's the way to go. Because those mom-and-pop movers with very big pickup trucks like that, with open ends, will charge you about 20 or 25 bucks to haul practically anything within a 10-mile radius, which is about a 16-kilometer radius. And they'll pack stuff into the back of that truck so tight and tall that'll make Jethro and his truck in the Beverly Hillbillies look like a piker. And when it's all packed in, no matter how overweight, overloaded, tall, or unmanageable it is, they always get through all right, and they never get stopped by the cops, because that's the normal way they do things down here in the third world. But if you want your stuff perfectly protected during the ride, you use an enclosed truck, right? And that's what Eddie did. Now, anywhere you see a bunch of these filete trucks parked, you'll see one or two enclosed furniture-moving trucks. So here's what happened with Eddie. He had that 4-man crew with an enclosed truck move his whole house. It took about 4 hours, a half a day. So it took them about 3 hours to pack and unpack, and they had a 1 hour drive. And what do you think it cost? How about $75 total? And that's four guys, 4 hours, plus a truck. Now, admittedly, those four guys didn't pack up everything in Eddie's house. They hauled it out all right, but they didn't pack it up. Eddie's girlfriend did most of the packing, and she put all the loose stuff, the kitchen plates, pots, pans, utensils, and decorations in boxes, and she marked them. And the movers took all those boxes, and they took all the furniture, which wasn't packed at all, the lamps, the TVs, the beds, all that, and they really packed it in. Now, movers in general are always a little crude and rough around the edges, and even more so down here in the third world, where nobody really cares about the details. So Eddie had tons of old blankets, tarps, and sheets around that he packed between the furniture as the guys were loading it in, which is always a good idea when dealing with movers down here, because they're always in a hurry to get to the next job and don't particularly care if they lean a mirror against a washing machine, which could be a recipe for disaster. And that's why you got to be watching all the time and adjusting things accordingly. So in the end, Eddie's move was successful. Nothing was really broken or damaged. At least, he doesn't think so. And the whole thing set him back $75. Now, earlier in the week, Eddie did call up one of the big professional movers down here, an internationally linked company that he found on Google, and they gave him a quote of $650 if they did the packing, and that didn't even include the packing materials, the boxes, the tape, the peanuts, the wrapping, and all that, and Eddie figured that would have cost at least an extra $50. And the price that they gave him, if they moved it without packing it, turned out to be about $425, which is about five times as much as Eddie ended up paying the mom and pop movers. Now, I did a little checking on the internet, and I found out that movers in the United States cost about $100 an hour for two men in a truck. And in Eddie's case, it took four men 4 hours. So for the same job as Eddie's up in the first world, it would take that two-man crew 8 hours. So at $100 an hour, it would cost for that same move $800. And that's your basic move without them doing the packing. And if you wanted the movers to pack the stuff, it would take a two-man crew about six more hours or $600 more. And that's the moving situation up in the first world. But down here, I hope it's finally sinking into your head that the cost of living here can be so low that it's almost ridiculous. But you do have to know some of the tricks, of course. Sure, down here you can go to the market and buy your fruits and vegetables at less than half of what you'd pay up in the first world. So, figuring out the cost of living down here based on that is obvious enough. But when it comes to the bigger items like housing and rent and utilities, buying land or building a house or a business, sure, it'll always be somewhat cheaper than what you'd paid up in the first world. But if you know the tricks, like long-term expats know them, and you hear the real dirt from guys like me and expat Eddie, you can really save a ton of cash. Just look at expat Eddie's moving example. He could have paid a big moving company $400 or $450 and been quite happy with that, because he'd be well aware of the fact that that was half of what they'd be charging him if he was up in the first world. He'd probably even brag about it at parties. But based on that story I just told you, you can get the very same thing done and get the very same results if you just know how to play things down here. And you have to live down here a while to figure that stuff out. So all you expat wannabes up there, the next time you're at a party up in Cleveland and you're talking about the usual topics and someone brings up the sad state of the U.S. economy and how it's going down in flames, well, you can have a really good comeback. You can tell them that there's a really cool alternative to going down in flames in your home country. You can tell them that they can go down to Latin America and live a proper first world life on less than half of the money it takes to do so up in the first world, with much less stress. And when people at that party give you that disbelieving look, just tell them to tune into the expat files and get it from the horse's mouth. And by the way, there is a caveat to expat Eddie's moving story. Now, once the truck was all loaded up, expat Eddie told the truck driver the general direction of his new house. But streets can be so chaotic and marked so badly, so it's always better to bring the guy there yourself. So expat Eddie said, "Follow me, I'll be driving my car, and I'll take you to the new house." So Eddie and his girlfriend drive ahead, and that loaded down moving truck was falling farther and farther behind. And Eddie, gabbing away with his girlfriend, suddenly noticed about halfway into the city, with tons of traffic, that he'd lost the truck completely. And he pulled over at a Shell station, got out, and looked at the traffic for about a half an hour, and the truck never went by. And the first thing that went through Eddie's mind was, they took a wrong turn and were lost. And the second thing that went through Eddie's mind was, oh crap, somebody I never met before, and who I naively trusted, just took off with my entire household full of furniture. And that thought started pressing down on him really hard, knowing that the city of San Salvador is one of the most dangerous crime-ridden cities in the world. So Eddie and his girlfriend have this really sinking feeling that all is lost. But luckily, Eddie has the guy's business card. But when he calls the guy, he doesn't answer. So Eddie gets back in his car and starts doubling back the way they came. And after about an hour passed, Eddie thought, hey, I think I'm going to pull over by that police station over there and report that the truck is missing. But his Salvadorian girlfriend advised him against it. She said, let's double back to where we first found that truck, and maybe we'll catch him on the way back. And if not, we can talk to some of those mom-and-pop movers where we met him on that corner. They all know each other, so they should know how to find him. But by then, Eddie was fit to be tied. He was getting the cold sweats, thinking that all was lost. And his girlfriend had dialed up the guy's phone at least 10 times, and there was still no answer. Then suddenly, on the way back, they spotted the truck pulled over by a gas station with all four brothers standing on the edge of the road, scouting the traffic looking for Eddie. And when Eddie saw them, he was the happiest guy in the world. And Eddie's girlfriend said, aren't you glad you didn't report them to the police now? Because if you did, in a few days, the description of that truck would be out to every transit cop, and sooner or later, that truck driver would be in a load of trouble. And you know, that's a typical case of how things go down here. The guy's cell phone didn't work because his battery ran out. That's it. And Eddie wasn't paying attention on the road. He was gabbing with his girlfriend. And here's the moral of that story. When you do select one of these mom-and-pop movers, if they have business cards and they're referred by a hardware store that has them on their list of movers, and they have their truck parked in an area where there's a lot of other guys doing the same kind of moving, that pretty much guarantees that these guys are legit. And Eddie, who comes up with a fresh new idea now and again, he actually surprises me sometimes, considering all the booze and drugs he's ingested. Anyway, he says next time he does a move like that, he's going to have his girlfriend discreetly pull out her cell phone and take a picture of the license plates, the truck, and the movers themselves while they're working and loading the truck, which is not a bad idea. Even up in the first world. So anyway, Eddie, being the big spender that he is when he's got money, was so happy to see that truck on the side of the road that he tipped the guys $25. So in the end, it cost him $100 to make that move. And the moving guys were happy, and Eddie was extremely happy. I dare anybody up in the first world to do half as good. Now I want to talk about something that Richard Martin on The Wake Up Call mentions on his show from time to time. He says, and so do I, that it's a very good idea to have a second flag. An escape plan to leave. That means leave your first world residence and find a more stable place economically and socially, preferably in the third world. Because a big tsunami of a crisis is coming and no one's going to be able to avoid it. And it's going to hit the hardest in the first world. And in the third world, the people will be minimally affected because so many of them are already poor and living at a subsistence level, close to the earth, and not much connected to transnational markets, which the first world is so overly dependent on. Okay, to leave or not to leave? That is the question. Well, if you've been listening to his show and my show, you've been getting a double dose of why it's really the proper thing to do. To leave that comfortable first world nest that, as I'm sure you know, is really not so comfortable anymore, and it's not going to get better, only worse. And I know there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions, who are wannabes that just want to get up and leave, but something or another is holding them back. And I've heard all the excuses, believe me. One expat told me for him it was like learning the piano or a foreign language. You want to learn how to do it so badly, but you just can't make the time to practice. Until something, the straw that breaks the camel's back, pushes you over the edge, and everybody has a different trigger point. And the fact is, every expat I've ever met down here had that hallelujah moment up in the first world that finally did push him over the edge, where he said, this is it. I just can't take it anymore. I gotta get out. And the straw that breaks the camel's back could just be a messy divorce, a bankruptcy, too many heavy alimony payments, IRS problems, or just too many harassing audits, or just the irritations of Big Brother shoving things down your throat. Maybe it's those killer healthcare costs, or a disaster like Katrina or 9/11 that shakes your life to the bone, or just plain day-to-day government intrusion, like those body scans and shakedowns at the airport. And a lot of expats come down here simply because they're sick and tired of paying a cumulative 50% or more in taxes and getting almost nothing in return for it, especially when they realize that down here in Latin America, they'll probably never pay over 15%. They'll still get almost nothing in return for it, but at least they're not paying 50%. And of course, high on the list of reasons to leave the first world is the weather down here. Up north, if you draw a horizontal line dividing the United States in half, everything north of that line is pretty much miserable in the winter. And Canadians have it the worst. No wonder why there's so many down here. Their weather absolutely sucks. even though they try to convince us and themselves that they just love their winter sports and the frostbite and the shivering and the seasonal sicknesses that come along with it. And it's funny. You only hear Canadians up north talk about how they like their weather. I've heard them say that they love their four seasons and that life just wouldn't be the same without ice and snow. But when you run into a Canadian expat down here in Latin America, you hear a completely different story. The fact is, Canadians down here complain bitterly about the weather back home, and they never regret the decision to move south. Now, like I said, I've heard all the reasons why first world people can't just pick up and move. And I can't even count how many people have told me that they swear on their mother's grave, or the Bible, that they're gonna move down here someday. Only it's just not possible at the moment. Now, on the top list of their excuses why they just can't do it right now is kids and family. I hear that all the time. Well, you know, my kids are in the house and I have to wait till they move out of the house or get married or have a family or finish college. 100 excuses, all concerning kids. Which means if you actually did move down here, you'd really untangle yourself from that kind of stuff and the stress that goes with it. And if you think about that logically, ditching your adult kids just might be a good thing. And I can tell you for a fact, and I've heard this from a lot of expats, who find it hard to leave members of their family who are always trying to talk them out of it. Because obviously, if your kids are grown and you're planning on coming down to Latin America, you discuss it with them. And most of the time, they think you're nuts. And of course, they try to talk you out of it. Which is an awful lot to overcome. That's a lot of pressure coming from your immediate family. And they try to lay the guilt and the abandonment trip on you. I always wonder, why can't they just be happy for you that you're going to try something adventurous and new? In fact, I took a lot of the same kind of flack myself from my family, and some of them still think I'm nuts. But the ones that have come down to visit me always change their opinions after they actually see with their own eyes what kind of a lifestyle I actually lead and the kind of money I spend to achieve that kind of lifestyle compared to what they spend and the stress they have. In fact, you'd be shocked at the number of times friends and family that have been down here have pulled me to the side and said, "Hey, Johnny, you know what? I would just love to do what you're doing. But I got 22 years on the job, and it'll just take a couple more to get my pension. And I'm in the choir at the church, and I've got my golfing buddies, my car, and my house payments. Man, I'd love to do it, but I don't think I could pull it off." So it seems once you've actually made that decision to come down, the resistance you get from your family and friends always comes from those that have never been down here before. And once they do come down, it's obvious that a lot of them are just plain jealous. And the second big excuse I always get from expat wannabes is they just can't quit that job. The job that they hate, by the way. And of course, you always get that from guys who are waiting just a few more years to get their pension, which ties right into the lack of money. I hear that all the time too. "Well, I just don't have enough money tucked away to go down and pull off something like that." Which actually means they haven't been listening to my show, because I offer tons of great ways for expats to make first world style money down here, which in Latin American terms is really big money. And then you get that old excuse about the conveniences. "Well, if I go down to Latin America, I got a feeling I'm going to be going in reverse instead of forward." I mean, they are third world countries after all. And I'm too old to rough it. I need my air conditioning and my plasma TV and my TV programs and Starbucks and Walmart and Whole Foods and Sears and Home Depot and electric power and clean water 24 hours a day, just like in the good old US of A. And when I hear that, I know those people haven't listened to my show either. And people are reluctant to leave their first world hometown because they have their favorite hangouts and their favorite restaurants and their favorite discos and their favorite night spots. But to me and most other expats, the nightlife is much more interesting down here, believe me. In fact, it makes everything up in the first world look pretty boring. But you know, once a person's got an idea like that in his mind, it's like religion. You just can't convince him otherwise. So you're better off not even trying. And then I hear from expat wannabes who really have a desire to leave, but they feel comfortable in the groove they've made for themselves up in the first world, even as it deteriorates before their very eyes. It's the gilded cage effect, you know, when you have a pet bird in a cage for years and years and years, and you finally open the door to let him have his freedom, he just doesn't want to go out. In the end, he prefers the jail he knows to the great outdoors. It's a kind of inertia that we all have when we live in a place for a long time, like a gyroscope. No matter how hard you push on it, it still has its inertia and it wants to stay in the same place. And then you get the expat wannabes who talk about their money problems. And they tell me when they get all that money stuff resolved up in the first world, the car payments, the loans, the credit cards, then when they clean the slate, that's when they're going to make those plans to come down. Well, there's another reason they should be listening to this show. Because if they did, they'd realize that their money problems just might be over. Because they only need half as much or less to live down here, just like they did up in the first world. And a lot of us expats live better than we ever did. And expat wannabes are always asking me how much it takes to live a first world style of life down here. And then they tell me how much money they've got saved and ask me if it's enough. They throw out numbers to me. 5, 10, 20, 50, 100,000, what's enough? Well, that's a really hard question to answer, because that all depends if you're coming down here to work or not, or you're going to try to live off your savings. Not to mention if you're old enough to have a pension or Social Security. Because here's something you might not know. If you do get a Social Security check, if you open a bank account in any country down here in Latin America in one of their big banks, the U.S. government will direct deposit your Social Security money monthly into that account. And if you have a debit card from that bank, which every bank offers these days, of course, you can go to any ATM machine and withdraw your money in dollars or the local currency, so you practically never have to go to the bank. And generally, down here in Latin America, most ATM machines will give you dollars. And you can get anywhere from $200 to $400 a day out of those machines, depending on the country that you're in. So if you get a $1,500 a month Social Security check, you can pull all that money out, even if the ATM only lets you take $200 a day, in about 8 days. And here's the other thing. All the big banks down here in Latin America let you open up dollar accounts with a dollar debit card. So when you go to the ATM machine, and if you want to pull out dollars directly, and the machines always spit out 20s down here, by the way. Anyway, if you have a dollar account at that bank, you'll never pay an extra charge for pulling your money out of an ATM. But back to that point of how much you really need to live down here. Well, that depends on a lot of things, as you might imagine. And here's my basic advice. If you live in a place that's off the tourist trail, and you buy a little house or a condo so you don't have a house payment, and buy yourself a late model used car and you don't have a car payment, you can live just about like you live in the first world on $1,000 a month. And for $1,500 or $2,000 a month, you can live like an absolute king. But you're not going to be able to do that in high-volume tourist areas like Costa Rica, Panama, beach resorts along the Mexican Riviera, like Playa del Carmen and Cancun, or in those beachfront tourist towns where the big cruise ship lines stop, where the gringo dollar has contaminated the area. Well, if you stay away from those places and you choose to live anywhere in the rest of the 98% of Latin America, you'll do really well on $1,000 a month, as long as you don't have a car or a house payment. But if you do have a car and a house payment, or you have to pay rent, then you're looking at $1,500 a month or more to live like a first world person. And I'll be giving you some more great tips on how to do that in upcoming shows, so stay tuned. And just one more thing. One time, an expat wannabe said to expat Eddie, "How in the heck can you just pick up and leave like that? How did you do that, Eddie?" And Eddie said, "I'll tell you a little secret. All you gotta do is pick up a telephone and dial a travel agent."
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.